Okay. Good morning, everybody. Hope everybody is well. We are on sheet 6 of our ongoing series, of which Be'ezrat Hashem there will be 10. So there are 4 more coming after this. And we have a lot of ground to cover, but hopefully between now and the end of August, we should be able to get through all the material we need to look at. Today, I would like to look at something I think really fascinating, a little bit more philosophical, which is the question of what is emet? Is there truth? And how do we know that the rabbis, when they interpret the Torah the way they interpret it, how do we know that they're correct? Especially given that they disagree, often fundamentally, on certain issues, and one says the opposite of the other, is there some kind of objective truth? And if there is, how do we know which of the sides has hit it? And how could they both have hit it if they're the opposite of each other? If one particular sack says that something is kasher, and the other sack says it's not kasher, how can they both be true if there's one truth? Or maybe there isn't one truth. Maybe there are multiple truths. And if there are multiple truths, how do we know which ones are authentic and which ones are inauthentic? Unless you say that everything is true, in which case, nothing is true. Because everything is true, and therefore it doesn't really matter anyway, so that's a funny position to take. Therefore, this is a subject which the Gemara deals with, this is a subject which the rabbis deal with, and it's fundamental to the concept of psak, of halakha, of what that is and what it isn't. So let's have a look at this question to start with here on the top of the sheet. Can there be multiple truths? And the question is raised in the Gemara in Erevin with the very famous expression, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. What does that mean? Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. This appears a couple of times in the Gemara, once in Erevin here dealing with halacha, once in Gittin dealing with Agadah, which we're not going to deal with today. What does it mean and how is it used? Let's have a look at number one. Amar Rabbi Abar Amar Shmuel. It's quite a famous Gemara. 3 years, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel disagreed. Each group said the halacha is like us, and the other group says no, the halacha is like us. Until what? Until eventually. And by the way, this was not just a disagreement in principle. We're not looking at this now, but Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel actually came at a certain point to physical blows. There was this is the run-up to the end of the Second Temple period, and the Churban, there was a lot of fighting, not just in the Bet Midrash, but outside as well, until eventually Yatza Bat Kol, a Bat Kol came out, whatever a Bat Kol is, we'll see in a minute, to Amran said, Elu ba'elu dibri lekim chayim heim. These, now how are we going to translate that? These and these are the living words of God, or maybe the word chayim is qualifying God. Meaning, these and these are the words of the living God. Could be either translation. But, says the Bat Kol, halacha to Beis Hillel. The halacha is like Beis Hillel. So the Gemara asks, if both of them are really the words of God, so why did we randomly pick Beis Hillel? We could have picked Beis Shammai if they're both the words of God. So the Gemara answers an interesting thing. Because they were very foregoing, they were subdued. And they would teach both their opinion and the other opinion. Not only that, when they were teaching both opinions, they would put Beis Shammai opinion first, and then they would give their opinion. That's why we pass in the halacha like that. Why is that a good reason to maintain the halacha like them? Just because they're nice people? Because they have nice midot? Does that make them any more right than the other opinion? So the Gemara has already answered. At the end of the day, both opinions are right, whatever that means. Divrei Elokim chayim. And we are preserving Beit Hillel. Why? Because Beit Hillel are the ones that maintain multiple truths. Think about it. Beit Shammai say, it's my way or the highway. That's it. Beis Shammai gives one opinion and that's the only opinion. Beis Hillel say, no, it's also straightforward. There are multiple opinions. And even though in strict terms we could have picked either Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel, since Beis Hillel wished to maintain the idea of multiple opinions, quoting both sides, so we want to bring them as the halacha, because that will maintain Elu ve'elu. What is Divrei Elokim Chaim? So we looked a little bit about this when we looked at Rabbi Eliezer Berkowitz a few weeks ago. Chaim means what? What's Maim Chaim?
Moving,
dynamic, there's a dynamism in the system. It's not going to be brought to a halt. It's not going to be static. Beis Shammai wish to bring the debate to an end. Beis Hillel say, no, the debate is ongoing and ongoing and ongoing. It's Divrei Elokim Chaim, and the halacha ends up like that. By the way, what is a bat kol? Why is it not a ben kol? Why is it not just a kol?
Because women are always talking.
I don't know about that. I didn't say that. You said that.
Because women are always right.
Oh, that could be. Oh, Shira, and masculine and feminine. Kol Hashem is Nevuah. This is not Kol Hashem. The Nevuah has ceased. We talked about that last time. Nevuah ceased already by the end of the first temple. This is already the end of the second temple. And after the second temple. This is Bat Kol. This is the child of the Kol. This is derivative, a low level. This is more like Ruach HaKodesh. And it's not even a Ben Kol. It's not even a direct attack. It's more of a subtle. I think the feminine gives it more of subtlety. Meaning, I don't think there are voices coming out of the wall screaming the halakhot like Beis Hillel. It's more of an intuition, an instinctive thing. What's that? The Bina Yetera, maybe that's also to do with it as well. I'm not getting into a whole women-men issue here, but it's a bat kol, and the Chazal chose that word for a reason. Anyway, so here we have it. Two opinions, Divrei Elokim Chaim, the halacha is like Beis Hillel. And did they listen to the bat kol? Yes. Beis Shammai seems quite happy with the bat kol. They all went home, and that was the end of the debate. And historically, at a certain point, the Beis Shammai fights, the machloikas, came to an end. There's no question it came to an end. The Beis Hillel were preeminent. The Gemara is trying to explain how that happened. Now, let's put into that. We need to put a few different Gemaras together to get to the real question. Yes.
Could it be the interpretation of Eru Ve'eru Divrei Elohim HaChayim that there's a rationale to encourage debate?
Definitely.
And whenever you have a debate, it's like a golden star. In other words, the whole idea is to get people to argue and to try and find.
I think that's correct. That's why the halacha at the end of the day is like the view that wants to encourage that ongoing debate. Have a look now in this pasuk from Kohelet. We're going to put these ideas together and we'll come to an understanding of how truth works. Maybe. We'll try anyway. Divrei Chachamim Kedarbonos says at the end of Kohelet, Shlomo HaMelech says the words of the rabbis are like darbonot. They're sharp. They're like prods. Okay, cattle prods. Ukamas mirot, they're like nails. Netuim, they're planted. Bale asufois, they're lords of the gatherings. Nitnu miroya echad, given from one shepherd. Doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, that verse. The words of the rabbis are sharp. They're like nails, but they're planted. The lords of the gathering. What's going on with that verse? So there's a long Gemara in Chagiga, and I want to pick one part of it where it talks about the bale asufois. What does it mean, the bale asufois, the lords of the gathering? Says number three like this. These are the rabbis. They sit in groups. Asufim. They sit, gather together in groups, and they learn Torah. Halalu matameva, halalu matarim. One group says tahor. One group says tami. Halalu oisiv, halalu matinim. One group says otter. One group says musar. Halalu poisiv, halalu machshim. One group says pasul. It's invalid. And one group says kasher. And the Gemara now asks a fascinating question. Shema yoma adam, a person might say at this, how can I learn this Torah? How can I do this? Or everybody's telling me something different. This one says it's Tameh, this one says it's Tahor, awesome, Mutzah, Kasher, Pasul. Everybody's contradicting each other. Now, what's the question? I don't think the question is a practical question, who should I follow? Because if you're asking a practical question, why are you asking six rabbis? Why are you asking so many people? Of course, if you have three watches, you'll never know the time. Have one watch and you'll always know the time. Have one rabbi and you'll know what to do. So I don't think it's a practical question. The answer to the practical question is, Asei lecha rab. Ask a shayla and don't ask everybody. That's not the question. The question is more philosophical. How can I trust a Torah? How can I have confidence in a Torah when everybody says something different? When there's so much disagreement? Isn't this an indication that they've all got a bit mixed up? So the Gemara basically gives a strange answer, which is basically, don't worry, be happy. We'll see what the Gemara says. Talmud Lomer, the Torah says, Kulam nitnu mirei echad, don't worry, it all came from one shepherd. It all came from one source. Keil echad nitnam, one God gave them all. Paranas echad Amram, one leader, that's Moshe, said them all. Lipi adam kol ha-ma'asim baruch hu, they all came from Hashem. Dichsiv v'yidav elokim es kol ha-devarim ha'ele. the Gemara seems to indicate that all of these opinions on a certain level are coming from God. Okay, that makes me feel happier on some level, but at the end of the day, I still don't know how it works. So what should I do? So the Gemara says, "Af asa asay asnecha ka'afar cheses." Make your ear like an afar cheses. What's an afar cheses? It's an afar chesed was the kind of funnel that they used on a grinding machine. What do you call it? The mill. Okay, and you put the grain in the top, and it funnels it in, and it comes out in a smaller channel. So it says, make your ear like a big horn, like that. Uknel chalev, and get yourself a mind, maven, which understands. Lishmoye es divri hametamein, es divri hametarim, es divri ha'oisim, es divri hametirim, es divri poisim, es divri mashvim. Understand, everybody. Listen to all the opinions. In other words, the Gemara says, how do I react to multiple opinions in the Torah? So get yourself a head that can understand multiple opinions. How does that satisfy me? How does that make me happy now that there are multiple opinions? So we don't know yet. But at the end of the day, the Gemara says, we shouldn't be bothered by this question. We are not bothered by the fact that there are so many opinions on different things. In fact, what we need to do is get ourselves a mind that can accommodate, assimilate these different opinions. By the way, this is something that I find in women's learning, I teach mostly women, is not encouraged as much at an early age, and therefore has to be taught better. When it comes to guys who are learning Gemara all the time from a fairly early age, so they're used to, if you like, using their mind, opening and closing windows in their mind. If you think about it, if you're computer users and use Microsoft Windows, so you open up a window and you do something in it, and you minimize the window and you open up a different window and you have multiple windows open in your mind. And therefore, don't get surprised when we say something which is different from what we said 5 minutes ago, because that's a different shita. This is Rabbi Lezer's shita, this is Rabbi Yossi's shita, etc. And I think boys are used to this compartmentalization, and girls sometimes aren't, because the way that women are taught is often not to be opening and closing these windows in the mind. But you have to be able to do that. You have to, says the Gemara, get yourself a mind which is stratified, which is able to keep everything in the different boxes that it belongs, not to get confused. Yes?
I learned children before this. And he said, whatever you like to, but don't be against the other people. Get them all together.
Right.
Everybody has a gift. There are no people alike.
We'll come to exactly that point in source number 11 in a couple of minutes. Let's have a look. Now, we haven't answered the question yet. How can everybody be saying different things, and how do we know who's right? The Gemara just said, don't worry, understand all the opinions, you'll work it through. Let's have a look and plug in another Gemara, which will complement and act as a, if you like, as a foil against number one. Look at number four. This is a famous Gemara. Tanan Hafam, we have a Mishnah in Kalim, which says, this Gemara is taken from Bava Metzia, Chatchu Chulios V'natn Chol Ben Chulia L'Chulia. Without getting into the details of exactly the case, we're talking about an oven made of cheres, made of clay. And if the oven becomes tamei, what do you need to do in order to make the oven tahor? How much do you need to take it apart? Because you can't take a clay oven to the mikveh. It doesn't work. The mikveh only works for metal, for wood, whatever. It doesn't work for clay. So you have to smash it up and reconstitute it. How far do you have to smash it up? So the Mishnah there is dealing with an oven which has been chopped. If you imagine, you know those kids' toys where you have like a pole in the middle and then rings that you put one on top of the other, a big one, and a little one, a little one, a little one. So imagine something like that. You've got the oven in circular discs, and you put sand between the bits of the disc. Is that chopped up enough to be tahor again? That's all I'm going to say about the case, because it's not the case that bothers us or interests us, it's the reaction. Rabbi Eliezer, matahor. Rabbi Eliezer says, that's good enough, that's fine, that's tahor. Chachamim, but the rabbis, matamim. They said, no, it's not good enough. Let's see what happens. No. It's taught in a brisa. But Oysa Hayom, on that day, Heshiv Rebbe Eliezer called Shuvah Sheva Oilam. Rebbe Eliezer brought every possible answer in the world, every argument he could bring, but like Kiblu Hemen, they did not accept those answers. Amalehem, so he said to them, Im halacha kemaitzi charav ze yuchiach. If the halacha is like me, let the carob tree prove it. So what happened? Ne'ekah charav mimkoyma me'a'ama. The carob tree uprooted itself and ran 100 amos up the road. Whatever this means, this is midrashic, okay? Meaning, I'm not sure we have to be necessarily reading this in a literal sense. Each of these ideas is a code for something else. The carob tree, the water, we'll see in a minute. Anyway, the carob tree is running around, whatever that means. And that proves it. So Amru Loise, they said to him, I'm on the third line of number four. Amru Loise, they said to him, Ein meviim raya min acharav. Don't bring proofs from a carob tree. Meaning, if you want to argue in halacha, so let's argue. But don't, if you want to mess around, then we're not here to mess around. If you're going to do miracles, we can pack up and go home. Chazar v'amalhem. So then he said to them, "Im halacha kemoiti amatamayim yuchifer." If the halacha is like me, the water, the channel of water outside will prove it. Chazar amatamayim lacharehem. So the channel of water began to run backwards, uphill. Amrulah, they said to him, "Eimevin ra'im amatamayim." You can't bring halachic proofs from making the water run backwards. Chazav Amalem, he said to them, "Im halacha kemoitzi kozli beis hamedrash yuchif." If the halacha is like me, let the walls of the Beit Midrash prove it. What happened? Hata kozli beis midrash lipol. The wall started caving in on top of them. So at that point, they responded more harshly. Ga'ar behem Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua, who is the leader of the Chachamim, who opposed Rabbi Eliezer, he got up on his feet and he shouted at the walls. Amalem, he said to the walls, "If Tamid Chachamim Menatchim Zed Zeba Halacha, if rabbis are arguing about the halacha, Atem Matimchem, what's it got to do with you? You stay out of this." So what did the walls do? Loinaflu, they didn't fall anymore. Mitnei Kvodesh Rabbi Yeshua, out of cover for Rabbi Yeshua, he said, "Don't fall." But Loizakfu, but they didn't go back again. Mitnei Kvodesh Rabbi Yeshua, because of the cover for Rabbi Yeshua. And then Gemara says a very interesting statement then. He says, "V'adayin mativa oindim," they're still hanging like this. Whatever that means. This debate on some level doesn't cease. So finally he pulls out the final piece of weaponry he has. Chazar v'amalehem. So Rabbi Eliezer says to them, "Im halacha kamoisi min ha-shamayim yuchich." From heaven they will prove me correct. What happened? Yasta baskol. Here's another one of these baskols. Always handy when you need one. Okay, a baskol comes out and says, "Va'amra, malachem etzer Rabbi Eliezer. Why are you bothering arguing with Rabbi Eliezer? Shehalacha kemoisa b'chol makam. The halacha always follows him." Okay, well that seems to be the end of it. No, the baskol has come. He said the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. Should be the end. Amad Rabbi Yeshua al raglav. Amad Rabbi Yeshua stands on his feet and says, "Lo b'shamayim hi. Lo b'shamayim hi. The halacha is not in heaven." This is a pasuk from Parshas Netzavim. My, so the Gemara then puts in here in parentheses, "Ma lo b'shamayim hi." What does it mean, "lo b'shamayim hi"? Rabbi Yirmiyah says, "Shekvan mit matorah mehar Sinai." The Torah was already given at Sinai. "Ein anu mashkichim b'baskol." We don't follow a baskol. We're not interested in voices from heaven. "Shekvar katavta b'har Sinai b'Torah." God, you've already written in your Torah, "Achrei rabim lahasai." Follow the majority. Who was the majority? Rabbi Yeshua and the Chachamim on the one side, or Rabbi Eliezer on the other? Who's the majority? Rabbi Yeshua and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer was one man against the majority. The Torah said, follow the majority. We don't care if a baskol comes and says that the minority is right. No, we'll follow the majority. End of story. There's a postscript now. Ashkechei Rabbi Nosson. Rabbi Nosson, who came later, a couple of generations on, he was one of the colleagues of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who wrote the Mishnah. Rabbi Nosson came later, Le'eliyahu, and he found Eliyahu, also very handy if you know where to find him. Amalei said to him, "My avid kutshabrichu b'hahishaita." What was God doing at that moment when Rabbi Yeshua was saying, "Lo b'shamayim hi, I reject the baskol"? What was God doing? Amalei Eliyahu told him, "Kachayich." He was laughing, va'amar, and saying, "Nitzchuni banai, nitzchuni banai. My children have beaten me, my children have beaten me." Getting nachas. Chopping nachas from the children, because they said, "Lo b'shamayim." A very confusing, disturbing, problematic Gemara. Many questions. First of all, did we listen to the baskol here? No. What about the story of Rabbi Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai in Erevin? Did they listen to the baskol? Yeah. Why didn't Beit Shammai turn around and they say, "Lo b'shamayim hi, I don't care what the baskol says. If the baskol says the halacha is like Beit Hillel, I'm not listening." Why did they follow the baskol there, but not follow the baskol here? Why doesn't this Gemara refer to Eilu v'Eilu? What happened to Eilu v'Eilu? Everybody, Eilu v'Eilu. No, that's it. Achrei rabim lahatas, you're out, you're wrong. By the way, I didn't bring you the what comes after this. In the Gemara in Bava Metzia, they turn around to Rabbi Eliezer and said, "Are you now prepared to accept our psak as the majority?" And he said, "No." And they said, "Well, then that's it." And they put him in cherem. And the whole next half of the Gemara explains how he was thrown out. And everything, every heksher he'd ever given to anything was taken away. Every kashrus of every food, the food was burnt, it was tameh. And he died in cherem, unhappy, very bitter. And the whole of the Gemara talks about how Rabbi Akiva had to be the go-between to try and make shalom on some level. It's not a happy ending to this story, because he wouldn't accept the majority. How can we ignore God's truth? And how can God be happy about that? Lots of interesting things. So have a look, please, at one line from Tosfos. Tosfos says something interesting in number 5. Tosfos in Eruvin asked the question over there in Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, why do we listen to the Baskol over there but not in Bava Metzia? The In Toma, so Tosfos in number 5, if you want to ask, Mai Shana Deloi Kai Malan Kabaskol de Rebbe Lezer. Why is it that we don't listen to the Baskol over there with Rebbe Eliezer? And in this Gemara he's dealing with, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, we do listen to the Baskol. And he gives an interesting answer. A few answers, but here's the one I've brought for you. Dehasam, Yesh Loma, you could turn around and say, Dehasam, that over there in Bav Metzia, Haisa Kenegid Rabin. The Baskol was going against the majority. The Baskol was supporting the minority. The Hatorah Amra, didn't the Torah say Achre Rabim Lahatos? Follow the majority. Aval Hacha, but in Beit Hillel Beit Shammai Adar Rabba. On the contrary, Beit Hillel Havi Rubba. Beit Hillel were the majority. Beit Shammai were the minority. So Beit Hillel were the majority, and the Baskol supported the majority. So when the Baskol supports the majority, so then there's no problem, we go with the Baskol. But if there's already a majority, what's the question? Why do I need a Baskol? I don't need a Baskol to come and tell me what I know already, which is to follow the majority. I just look in the Torah and know that. So says Tosfos, the loy hutzchu Baskol ela mishum de Beis Shammai havu charifit. We only needed a Baskol because Beis Shammai were more charif. What does charif mean here? Sharp. Intelligent. Quick. Beis Shammai, on a certain level, were more charif than Beis Hillel. They were super geniuses. Beis Hillel were also geniuses. But Beis Shammai were super geniuses. And they knew that they were right. And they turned around to Beis Hillel and they said, look, I don't care if you're the majority. Surely God doesn't want us to follow the majority if the majority is wrong. Come on. You know, Beis Hillel, that we are more intelligent. Even though you are brilliant, we are even more brilliant. You have an IQ of 160, we have an IQ of 190. So why should we follow you if we know that you're wrong? I don't care if you're the majority. Even one, look at Avram Avinu. Avram Ha'ivri, from the other side of the river. The whole world said X, he said Y. So can the minority be right? Of course the minority can be right. So why should we listen to you? Surely God, when he said follow the majority, he didn't mean follow the majority when it's wrong. Like lemmings over the edge of the cliff. We'll all follow you over the edge of the cliff. Surely not. Comes the Baskol and says, yes, yes. We do want you to follow the majority. Even when it's wrong. If you want me to follow the majority, says the Beis Shammai, of course, the name Shammai, they're rooted in Shamayim. They will follow a Baskol. They listen to a Baskol. 2 generations later, when Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are having the same argument, Rabbi Yeshua is less patient. And he says, come on, we've already been through this. We've already nearly had a civil war over this. This is not just a technical argument. This is the Jewish people ripping itself apart. You can't be against the majority, even if you think you're right. We've settled this. We've dealt with this. And Rabbi Eliezer says, no, I still don't accept it. By the way, Rabbi Eliezer, if I asked you to guess whether Rabbi Eliezer was from Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel, what would you say? Beis Shammai. And he's called a Shamuti. Rabbi Eliezer is called a Shamuti, which has a double meaning. Number one, it means that he was in Cherem. And also it means he was a Shammainik. Okay? And he was trying to revive an old battle which had died itself down. This is a dangerous business. People, put it into modern context, people today have forgotten to a large degree why the Hasidim and the Mitnagdim were so upset with each other 150 years ago. People have forgotten that. And when people have said, well, let's bring out new material to remind everyone, no, you know something? Let them forget. It's fine. It doesn't matter now that now it's all down to furry hats and like socks and things like that, and people are very superficial. Not everybody. But there were real reasons why the Misnagdim and the Hasidim were very against each other. Fundamental, philosophical, hashkofa reasons. And now it's been largely forgotten. Don't we rake over the old debates. Fine. So where does this leave us? Apart from with some very interesting Gemaras. It seems that there are different opinions. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. But on certain situations we have to go with one and not with the other. Majority, whatever it is. I want to suggest to you in the 30 minutes that we have that there are two models in the Rishonim, two models in the medieval authorities as to how we understand this idea of truth. One model says that there are multiple truths. There's a pluralistic approach. I don't mean pluralistic in a modern sense of like everybody's right, which is really relativistic. Most people, especially young people today, when you challenge them, they don't actually believe that anything is objectively right at all. It's like, this is your opinion, this is my opinion, you're right for you, I'm right for me. We're not saying that, obviously. Because to have an opinion, you have to have the right to have an opinion. Meaning, if I walked into the NASA space program tomorrow morning and said, well, I don't know why you guys are running the space program this way. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? They'd call security and they'd have me thrown out. What do I know about cosmology? And yet every Jew seems to feel that they have the right to input on the complexities of the halachic process. Why? Because they're Jewish. They have an opinion on everything. Three or four opinions on those things. So, you know, obviously, in order to have a seat at the halachic table, you have to have some kind of qualification, because otherwise, you know, what are you talking about? But nevertheless, this model says that within that group of people who have that qualification, there are multiple truths, and it's just a question of deciding which one we're going to follow. Okay? There is another opinion, which we'll see soon, that says, no, there's one truth. There's one answer, that's the answer that God says, and if we get it, we get it, and if we don't, we miss it. And we'll see how that works in both of those opinions. Okay, let's have a look now. We've got quite a lot to do. Have a look, please, onto page 2. Look at the pluralistic model. Number 6. Amar Rabbi Yannai. Rabbi Yannai says the following. Lo nitna divrei Torah chatichin. This is a midrash in Tehillim. The Torah wasn't given in chatichin. In pieces, like in sound bites. The Torah wasn't given clear cut from Hashem. Ella al kol dibur shehaya oimah kodesh baruch hu lemoshe haya oimah lo memtes panim tahor memtes panim tami. But rather, everything that God communicated to Moshe, he said 49 ways of understanding this to be tahor, and 49 ways of understanding this to be tame. Now what's with the number 49? What does the number 49 represent? 7 times 7. And what does 7 represent? Maral talks a lot about these ideas, but 7 represents the maximal understanding in this world. 8 is already a leap off, just like 50 is the leap off into the next world, like the Shavuos. We told in the Torah to count to 50. 50 days for Sfirat HaOmer. And yet we never make it to 50. It's the built-in frustration of being a human being. We're told to count to 50. We get to 49, and then we reset to 0. If you think about this, there's a kind of frustration in there. It's the same idea of 70. Shivim panim l'Torah. It's the same idea, different kinds of approaches to 7. Anyway, so Moshe Rabbeinu is told 49 this, 49 that. So this is frustrating. Amar l'Panav, he says to God, Ribono shel Olam, ad matai na'amod al biruro shel davar? When are we going to get some clarity here? Meaning, what am I going to tell people when they come and ask me, Moshe Rabbeinu, is my sukkah kosher or not? Am I going to give them a drosha? Well, here are 49 ways of understanding how your sukkah is kosher, and here are 49 equally convincing ways of understanding how it's not kosher at all. If that's what you get when you ask a shaila, then it's time to ask a different rabbi. You don't want a drosha, you want a pshat, finished. How am I going to get clarity? So God says to him, clarity. Amalei said to him, achrei rabbi lahatos, just follow the majority. Rabbi matan tame, if most of the rabbis say tame, it's tame. Rabbi matar, if they say tar, tar. Meaning, the actual psak is more of just a practical thing. It doesn't go to the root of the truth. The truth is that there are 49 different ways of seeing this and that. If you just need clarity, okay, you know, practically this generation will go this way, then they'll go that way, then they'll go this way. The practical psak is perhaps less essential than the actual multiple truths. Similarly, the Ritzvah picks up on this, and he brings it into Elu Ve'elu. Look at number 7. The Ritzvah on Eruvin, on the Gemara of Elu Ve'elu, says the following. Elu Ve'elu di Rilikim Chayim. Shalu Rabbeinu Tzarfat. The rabbis of France. Okay, the French are here again. Number 7. The rabbis of France ask, Heich Eshashe Yushneim Divrei Elokim Chaim? How could it be that they're indeed both the words of God? Vezeh Oise, Vezeh Matir. And yet one says Oser and one says Mutter. How can that both be God's word? Vetirtsu, and they answer, and he brings the Medrash. Ki kasha'ala Moshe lemarom lekabel Torah, when Moshe went on high to receive the Torah, hiraulo, they showed him our kol dava v'dava, mentes panim v'issa, mentes panim v'heta, v'shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu azeh, he's just quoting the Medrash. Moshe asked God, v'ama, and he said, she yuzem masur l'chachmei Yisrael shebechol dor v'dor, that the actual practical answer will be in the hands of the rabbis of all generations, v'yeh hachra k'motam, and the psak will be like them. V'nochon hu, says the Ritva, I think this is true, l'fi hadrash, on a drash level, Uberderech ha'emes, but on a Kabbalistic level, yesh tam v'soy b'davar. There's an even deeper reason. Okay? But at least on a drash level, we have the idea that there are multiple truths given at Har Sinai, which is fascinating. How can there be multiple truths given at Har Sinai? So without going into all of the details, number 9, I'm not going to read through in full, but basically, read the first four lines with me, the Kli Yakar in Devarim here, when he's going on the posuk of rabbinic authority, which we'll see in a future shir, he says, Lo yisosu min adavar asher yigidu lecha yomim u'smol. You know, the mitzvah that we have to follow the rabbis right and left, even when they say left is right, and even when they say right is left. How can that be? How can I follow them when I know that they seem to be saying the wrong answer? So he says as follows: Ki kfarim uchazal shema yoma adam hoyil v'halalu matarim halalu matarim halalu oisim v'halalu matirim heich ani lama tarim me'asa. He quotes the Gemara in Chagiga. How can I follow a halachic system which is so in opposition to itself? Talmud lama nitn miroy echad kulam kel echad nitnan etc. He quotes the Gemara in Chagiga, and he says v'kasha. This is difficult. Haloi hadra kush leduchta. Doesn't the question remain? Saif saif, at the end of the day, heich ani lama Torah, how can I learn Torah when there are so many different opinions? Elabir hadavarhu, but the explanation is as follows, and I've underlined on the third line of number 9, shekol davar tuma v'tara yesh kama panim l'tara. Okay? V'kama panim l'tara. Nothing is 100%, he said. Take something which is tame. It may be tame 98%, but there's a 2% part of it on some halakhic level which you could see as tahor. Everything. Nothing's ever 100%. And therefore, if the rabbis turn around and say something which you think is tameh is really tahor, they're just taking that minority, if you like, which is present there, and saying, we're going to follow that minority. Even to the point, like we see, that in order to get on the Sanhedrin, the Gemara says, you have to be able to come up with a way to be matahir asheretz. A sheretz, which is the most obviously tameh thing, a creepy crawly that the Torah says is tameh. How could you design an argument to say that it's really tahor? No, you have to be able to do that, to be able to see that element of the other side in everything. Nothing is ever completely trade. There's an element of kasha in it. Nothing's ever completely possible. Nothing's ever completely tameh or awesome. There's always a mixture of everything, and therefore the rabbis are there to try and discover that minority and bring it out. It's a bit like, you know, when we have a pixelated image today on the screen. You and I look at an image and it looks white. But actually, when you blow it up and you see the pixels, there are little black dots all over it. It's just that as a whole, it looked white. But when you zoom in, you see actually there are actually bits of black inside it. They just didn't bring themselves out. And therefore he says that's how it works. Everything is a mixture of everything in some ways, and the rabbis are able to zoom in on this or zoom in on that. The Maharsha has the Kabbalistic answer that the Ritva was alluding to. Look at number 10. Number 10 is fascinating. Why is it indeed, and we come on to Mrs. Fachner's point right now, why is it indeed that there can be so many different people with so many different opinions? So look at number 10. Hamukubalim kasvu tam belava. So it says the Marashal, the Yamshal Shlomo, that actually more than just we saw before, the Mukubalim have an answer to this. And what do they say? The Fishekal and the Shamas Hayu Bahar Sinai. All the Neshamas were at Har Sinai. The Kiblu Derech Mem Tes Sinoras. And actually they received through 49 Sinorot. What's a Sinor? A pipe. So let's say like a channel. Think of it more like broadcasting. Okay? 49 channels. There are 49 wavelengths going on at Har Sinai, and everyone's kind of tuned in on a different wavelength. Heim HaKoilas, and he says an amazing thing, these are the voices, Hashem Shama, which they heard, Vagam Ra'u, and saw. Remember it says in the verses at Har Sinai that they saw the sounds? What does it mean they saw the sounds? You can't see sounds. He says they're not sounds. The kolot are not sounds. They're information download. And when it says they saw them, it means that they tuned in to this information. The Kol Yisrael Roy Metakolos Hein Hadeus. All the Jewish people saw the sounds, which are really the information. Hamit Chalkot Metinor, which are all coming in different channels. Kol Echad Rama Derech Tinor Shalom. Each one, each person had their own channel. The Fi Hasagasa, according to their own understanding. The Kibbal Lefi Koich Nishmasa, and received according to their own strength of neshama. Hel Yona LeRoy Biluya or Pechisusa. Zerachok Mitzvah. Everyone's different. Everybody tunes into Torah differently. Add until she'echad yegia l'tahor, one person can stand at Har Sinai and hear tahor. The hasheni yegia l'kseh ha'achron, another person can stand at the same Har Sinai and hear tamei. The hashlishi, and a third person, le'em tos, can stand in the middle of them if you will. Rachok mina katzoyz hakol emes, and they're all true. Why? Because the Maharshal is focusing not on the fact that God is giving in multiple ways, but we're receiving in multiple ways. Which may be two sides of the same coin, but at the end of the day, he's saying there are different people and they understand things differently. And as long as they're qualified, again, a complete ignoramus that walks into the halachic process, we've no need to listen to them. Obviously, they're not qualified. But someone who is qualified sees things differently. And we love that. We like that. We encourage that. We want there to be different opinions. I was once at the Kotel on a Kirov group. I was leading the Kirov group. And after Friday night at the Kotel, you know, amazing inspirational experience. So there's hundreds of minyanim and there's soldiers and there's chassidim and there's this and that. So one of the kids said to me on the way back up to dinner, he said, "This was so amazing, but wouldn't it have been even nicer if all 3,000 people at the Kotel could have davened together in one big minyan?" And I said, "No, actually, I don't think that's the Jewish way. I think the Jewish way is we have 15 little minyanim, and we all make room for the other minyan. You know, and on a hashkafic level, we don't agree with their minyan, but at the end of the day, there's room at the kotel for everybody's minyan. Okay, I'm din sevuf v'mishdach avim revach, and therefore we make a brocha on multiple opinions." We make a brocha on the fact that people see things differently. If you see 600,000 Jews all together, what brocha do you make? Look at number 11. Tan Rabbanan, the Gemara says in Brachas, Haroi uchlasei Yisrael. If you see crowds of Jews, 600,000, what do you say? Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Chacham Harazim. Chacham Harazim. Chacham, that God is the wise one, knower of all secrets. Why? Says the Gemara, She'ein da'atam domeh zeh lazeh. Because none of them have the same opinion as any other of them. Just like the ein partzufeihem domin zelazeh. Just like nobody has the same face. When you walk into my shir, I don't expect you to take my face for the first of the shir, just like I don't expect you to take my opinion. Why? Why would you take my opinion any more than you have my face? You have your own face, your own opinion. And we make a brocha on that. If we can find 600,000 Jewish people together. I went last year, as I'm sure many of you did, to Rav Avadi Yosef Zecher Tzadik Livrotza's funeral, to his Levaya, expecting to see 600,000 people. In fact, I only saw three people. The guy that was shoved against me like this, and the fellow that was shoved against me like that. So actually, I couldn't make a brocha on anybody. But I was thinking, I'm going to see 600,000 people, but as it was, it didn't happen that way. Birkas Achama. Maybe. I was standing in Harnof, I didn't see that many people yet.
Perhaps I should wait to the end to ask my question. Could it not be that the multiplicity of opinions allows for subjectivity?
Yes, I definitely could be, and I don't think that's a bad thing, because we need a certain level. We talked about this a little bit when we looked at Rav Glasner with the Dora V, and he said that the transmission of Torah has to retain its accuracy and authenticity, but at the same time introduces an element of each generation as it goes along. Absolutely. There has to be an element of subjectivity. Because human beings are subjective people.
So I based my comment on the fact, two women can come to a rabbi for a sack or a chicken.
Right.
One is a poor woman who can't afford a
right. chicken. Right. Ah, I see what you mean. Yes.
And therefore you will find the opening to her.
Right. Right. I agree, but that's not quite the same thing, because they're two different cases. A case of the rich woman and a case of the poor woman. And the psak is for the rich woman X and for the poor woman Y. Multiple opinions is when two rabbis come together for the same woman. And he says, this is kosher for the rich woman. He says, no, this is possible. This is not kosher for the rich woman. So when you have different cases, you'll see your opinion, your view is much more like Rashi, which we'll see in a few minutes. Have a look over on page number 3. Yes. Yes and no. For Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu has to be Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because he's receiving it through God. He is transparent. He is an aspeklaria meira. He's a see-through mirror. He's not giving any of his own views in this. Because that's Torah min haShamayim. Moshe Rabbeinu, Torah min haShamayim. If I'm getting Torah min haShamayim, I can't have any of you or I mixed in. But once Torah is Lav haShamayim, which is when Moshe dies, Yeshua is Lav haShamayim, remember? And Yeshua is like the moon, and not the sun. And even though the moon is reflecting the light of the sun, it looks like the moon. It doesn't look like the sun. It looks different. And therefore, once you step out of Shemaim, there is a human element to things. Have a look at number 3. I've put these fun pictures. You've seen them before many times. The rabbit, the duck. Is it a rabbit? Is it a duck? Is it a rabbit? Is it a duck? The old woman, young woman, you know, which is it, young or old? And you know, whenever people look at this, there's always someone that says, I can't see the old one, I can only see the young one. And then someone else says, I can only see the young one, not the old, whatever it is. You'll see in a minute, I'm sure you'll be able to see all of them in the same one. But at the end of the day, it can be seen differently depending on your opinion. But it could be a rabbit or a duck, but it can't be an elephant. If you think that looks like an elephant, then you need to see somebody about that. It's not, you can't say, well, that's my truth. No, it's not. It's not an elephant. You're wrong. You need to get that sorted. And therefore, there is a limit to multiple truth or multiple ideas. Right. In the last 15 minutes, let's move to the second approach. You got it now? Everyone got both? Everyone got the rabbit and the duck and the old woman and the young woman?
Yes.
Excellent. If you don't see, there's always someone who doesn't see the young woman. You can't see the old one. You can't see the young woman. You see, this is it. This is machlokas in action. Okay? I'll leave you to think about it. You see it? Very good. Now, let's go. Look in number 12, please. Rashi and many others take a different view, which in some ways is a more challenging view, which is, no, there's one answer. There's one answer, which is God's answer. And if we get it, we get it. And if we don't, we missed it. Okay, so how does that work? Look at number 12. Rashi on the Gemara in Chagi, when it says, make your ear like a trumpet. Says Rashi, Ma'acha shekulon liban l'shamayim. Since everybody at the end of the day is l'shem shamayim, Beit Shammai v'Beit Hillel, everybody's doing it l'shem shamayim. Therefore what? Asei aznecha shama'at ulamoid. Make your ear to listen and to learn. V'da and know divrei kulam, all of them. Why? V'kesheteda lahavchin eize yichsha. And when you finally work out which one is correct, kva halacha kamoisa. That should be the halacha. But there is a correct answer. There's a right answer. Similarly, number 13, Rashi in Ksuba says, Ki pliki trei amurai bedin. When two different views are given in the Gemara on a halacha, or the issa, the hetzah, or an issa and a hetzah, the kol chad ama, hachin isdabe tama. Each one says the reason that appears to them. Ein kan sheker. They're not lying. That's not incorrect. Kol chad v'chad svaradi dekama. Each one is giving his own opinion. One is thinking it should be mutter. Another is giving reasons leisura that it should be aser. Mar madami milsa la milsa hachi, and one is comparing it more to this. Mar madami milsa leinyan achrina, and the other is comparing it more to that. The ikila meima, and therefore we can say elu the elu divrei Elokim chayim, not because they're all right, says Rashi, but zimnin the shayach haytime, because in some cases this reason applies. V'zimn in the shayach haytime, and in other cases that reason applies. Shehatam mitapech lefi shinui advarim b'shinui mu'ud, because one tiny change in circumstances can warrant a change in halacha. I once asked a shayla. I'll never forget this. I asked a shayla, and I received busa. I was at a barbecue with my wife and home, and I cut open. I'm not going to get into all the details. After dinner, I cut open a banana, which was on the barbecue, by mistake, with my wife's best pair of cutting knife. And boy, did I get it. This is my best vegetable pair of knife, and you just sliced the banana on a meaty barbecue, sizzling with fat. You go now and ask a shayla. So I went, took the knife to a rav, and I said to the rav, look, I think I've made my wife's best knife basari, but I wanted to ask you if I'm right or wrong, and I gave him the circumstances. Anyway, he asked me lots of questions, and he said at the end, the knife is still paraf. And by the way, he said, every single nuance of difference that I asked you made a difference to the shayla. Did you cut it this way? Did you cut it that way? And you had to know your adea backwards and forwards to know the answer to that shayla. And he said, next time you come to me with a shayla, don't you tell me what you think the answer is and ask me if I agree. You tell me the facts and I'll tell you the psak. Okay. But it's a good musa. Meaning, I don't go to a rav and say, well, you know, this is the halacha, what do you think? Every case is very subtly different. And therefore, Rashi's saying all of these different opinions could be relevant to slightly different cases. But in each case, there's only one opinion, which is right, because the opinion will be applicable to that case only. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his introduction to the Igros Moshe, he clearly goes with this approach. Look what Rav Moshe says, number 14. He's asking, who am I to give psak for the generation? He says, who am I, Rav Moshe Feinstein? That we are obligated, chachmei doros achronis, the rabbis of the later generations, the hirus to give psak. Shelaloi hayo nechshavim higila harabah doros chachmei ha-gemara. Even though we would have been considered nobody by the chachmei ha-gemara, Sheyesh vaday lechush, because we always have to be concerned. Ulai loy kivanu amitut hadvar hadin. Maybe we got it wrong. Maybe we didn't hit the din. Kefishu ha'emet klapei shamaya. According to what the shamayim would say the din was. Avel ha'emet lehora. He says there's two kinds of emes. There's emes in shamayim, and there's emes in hora. There's emes for psak. The emes for psak, Kfar Nema has already been stated loy b'shamayim. Meaning, he carries on. As long as the Chacham has made proper investigation, to clarify the halacha in the Shas of Poskim, according to his ability, the Kovid Rosh with a serious focus of Yira, Me'ashem Yisbarach, and Medir Shemaim, the Nira Loisha came who Psak Adin, and it seems to him that this is the Psak, who Ha'emet Lahora. That is the Emet for Psak. And he has to give that psak. Af im be'etzem, even though in the essence, gal yeklap shamay, it will be revealed in heaven, she'enu kena perish, that it's not correct. It doesn't matter, says Rav Moshe. Because he did the best he could, that is the psak that he could come to. Va'al kezeh nema, she'gam dvarav dir elokim chayim. That's what it means, elu ve'elu dir elokim. Not that they're all correct, but that there is a correct answer, and I did my best. If I did my best as a fully qualified person that did the what I possibly could, that psak is called Dibur Elokim Chaim, even though it's wrong on a certain objective level. Doesn't matter. What more can you expect from the Poisek Ador than to do his best? That is an emes. That's a kind of emes in and of itself. Ma'acha sheloi nira ha'peish, because that's what seems to him to be correct. K'moshe pasak as he paskin. V'loi haya stira l'dvarav. V'ikabo schar al horosa. You'll get a reward for doing this. Even though he got it wrong on some level. So Rav Moshe clearly understands that there is an objective truth, and we might miss it. But what more can we do? The Ran asked the question on the last page, just flip over the page. I'm not going to look at the whole thing now. But the Ran asked the question, he has a long, the Droshas HaRan, the Rabbeinu Nissen of Girona, has a series of essays called the Droshas HaRan, which deal with very, very detailed hashkafic issues, really on the point. That I think this should be a compulsory limud. It's an absolute pele to me that this has never been translated into English. Maybe because it raises questions which are so difficult and fundamental. But the Ran asks this question, and without going through, I'll tell you what he says. He takes Rav Moshe's approach and says, look, if the Poisek gets it wrong, even though he did the best he could, then how does that work? Meaning, if you understand, like we understand, that the halachic reality makes a difference. For example, the Chofetz Chaim says, at the beginning of Hilchos Shabbos, that why do Chazal say that there are 613 mitzvot, which correspond to the 613 parts of the body? 365 this and 248 that. Why do they make that comparison? Meaning, there aren't really 613 mitzvot. I'm sorry to break it to you. You can count however many you want to count. Chazal say there are 613. You have to try hard to get to that number and develop rules. And there aren't 613 parts of the body either. I mean, it depends how you count them. Do you count two arms, two legs in the body? You can get to six. You can get to 20 billion, depending on whether you count on a cellular level. Why are Chazal saying that there are 613 parallel to 613? Because there's a Chofetz Chaim, they want to make you understand that every single halakha corresponds to a piece of reality within us. On a spiritual level. So it may be, he says, for example, a more minor mitzvah like Shatnas, when we go to Shamayim, when we present ourselves as a spiritual being, maybe that corresponds to the little finger. And if a person neglected or abused that mitzvah, so they will be lacking in that reality part of their existence. But Shabbat, and this is where he's coming from, maybe Shabbat like the head. Meaning, you can survive in Olam Haba missing the spiritual equivalent of a little finger. But you can't survive without a heart, or a head, or lungs, or whatever that is. That's what Chayiv Koris is. He wants to deal with that. Okay, so, says the Ran, okay, so each part of spiritual reality is real. So, how does it help me if the rabbi did the best that he could? If the doctors did the best that they can, and they identified this medication as being X, and in fact, it's poison, and you take it, then it doesn't turn into something good for you just because the doctor said it was good for you. If there's a reality to the thing, there's a reality. So if on a level, klapei shamayim, this piece of meat is treif, I ate a piece of treif meat, how does that help me that the rabbi said he was okay? When I get to shamayim, they're going to say, you ate treif. Well, what could I do? But you ate treif. I can't take that away. How does it help? It's a great question. If you say there are multiple truths, okay, so I followed this multiple truth, that multiple truth, they're all true on a certain level, or the ones that are true, and therefore you can't blame me. But if you say there's one truth, then how does that work? And he answers the following. That the merit that a person gets, either the poisek or the person who's following the psak, for following the mitzvah of listening to the psak, outweighs the damage which is done spiritually by whatever they did wrong. Meaning, if I eat a piece of treif, because the rabbi says it's kosher, and it's not kosher, it's treif. And I'm not, by the way, talking about where the rabbi made an obvious mistake. Rabbis are not perfect. The Sanhedrin's not perfect. There's a whole procedure in the Chumash as to what to do if the Sanhedrin made a clear error. I'm not talking about errors. I'm talking about where they did the best they could. They came to a conclusion that's just not the conclusion in Shammai. Says the Ran, if I follow the psak of the Sanhedrin or the rabbi, whatever, I'm doing two mitzvahs d'oraisa. The mitzvah of loisosor, not to deviate from the rabbis, the mitzvah to listen to the rabbis. The merit for that mitzvah outweighs the fact that I ate treif. Or even that I broke Shabbos. Or whatever it was. It's an interesting answer. How does that work? How does he know? How does that... But that's how he's saying you can actually, at the end of the day, the fact that you might technically, objectively do something wrong, nevertheless, it's still spiritually, it's better than you should. He says God will prefer you to follow the Sanhedrin and do the quote-unquote wrong thing than to not follow the Sanhedrin and do the quote-unquote right thing. Because at the end of the day, we're not in Shamayim. By the way, there is a well-known idea, people seem to know this, that when it comes to the Mashiach, then we'll follow Beis Shammai instead of Beis Hillel. The reason for that is not just because we feel like a change, it's because we are with Beis Shammai, the level of knowledge will increase to the point where Beis Shammai is now within the understanding of the people, and therefore, of course, we'll follow him. I just want to finish with last couple of things. In the last 2 or 3 minutes, I want to show you just a couple of midrashim which I think are very beautiful. Truth. What is truth? So the Gemara in the midrash in number 16 says, Amar Rabbi Simon, B'shah Shevar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Livras Asa Adam Harishon, Nasa Malchi Hasharit Kitin Kitin. When God wanted to create mankind, the Malachim ganged up on God. And this is a very famous Medrash. Some said, Chaburus Chaburus. Mehem Omrim Al Yivra, some said, don't create man. Mehem Omrim Yivra, some said, do create man. Chesed said, do create man. And Emes said, don't create man, etc. What did God do at the end of the Medrash? He takes Emes and throws him out of Shemaim. And then the Malachim go absolutely wild. They're saying, Emes is no longer in Shemaim. This is the Olama Emes. How can you throw Emes out of Shemaim? So God says, no. I want Emes, look at the last line, Hadahu Dichsiv, Emes Me'eretz Tzmach. I want Emes to grow up from the ground. I've created man, not that he can work out the Emes in Shemaim. That's not how it works anymore. You have to do the best you possibly can within the limitations of the human condition. Emes now comes from the floor up. And we know this to be true. Keset Meraklim Lifnei HaKala. When the Chosen comes up to you and says, don't you think my Kala is the most beautiful woman in the world? What do you say? So you will not be surprised to hear that this is a machloket between Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel. Bet Shammai say you have to tell the truth because there is an absolute emes. Now they don't say you have to tell the truth, like you describe what she really looks like, but you have to change the subject. You have to say, oh, you know, you should have mazel and brocha, whatever it is. Good, lovely personality. So Bet Hillel says, no way, you can't possibly say that. You have to lie. You have to say, Kala Navichasuda. Ah, but isn't it a lie? No. Because, Mutal Shamis Mipnei HaShalom. Because when it comes to Shalom, Emes is not such a straightforward thing. And I'll leave you with one last idea. Each of these is a sugi in and of itself. The Gemara in Sanhedrin gives a story of Midrash. He says, there was a rabbi who said he'd never tell a lie. Never, ever tell a lie. What did he do? He went to a town called Truth Town, says the Gemara. And he met a wife from there. And they had 2 children. It's a place where no one ever lied and no one ever died. Marvelous. He lives in a place where no one ever lies. That just suits him down to the ground. One day, says the Gemara, his wife was in the bath preparing to go to the mikveh. and the neighbor came and knocked on the door and said, I'd like to speak to your wife. What's she doing right now? And, of course, he's in Truth Town. So he's about to say, she's in the bath preparing for the mikvah. And he thought, he said, she's not at home right now. Ah, says the Gemara, the two sons that they have together, died. Aww. It's a midrash, don't worry. It's not. The two sons died. The people from the town ran up to them. They heard somebody died and they said, what is this? This is the time, this is the place where no one dies. And, well, why are people dying? So he says, look, what could I do? It's not Derech Eretz. I couldn't say that my wife was in the bath. It's a lo b'seder. So they said, do me a favor, the people. Get out of our town. We can't have your people here. Because you start lying, people start dying. It's not acceptable. Finished. Says the Maharal, is there indeed a place where no one ever lies, no one ever dies? Yes. It's called Shamayim. If you want to live in a world of absolutes, absolute emes, then you have better live in Shamayim. Because in this world, emes is not so straightforward. Sometimes emes clashes against tzniut. Sometimes emes clashes against shalom. Sometimes if someone is being damaged, someone goes and breaks into your house and says, where do you keep your money? You don't have an obligation to tell them of emes. It's obvious that emes is a value which in the human world is difficult to pin down. And this is true in halakha as well. It doesn't mean it's a free-for-all. It doesn't mean there is no emes. There is emes. But emes is complex, subtle, sophisticated, and hopefully today we've had a little bit of an insight into how it works. Okay, I'll leave it there. Thank you.